Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 15th, 2013.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This very long period that the brain kind of keeps options open is the basis for most of the good and bad.
It may be that early on in autism, there's a great propensity to be attracted to and process non-face objects.
We were able to reverse the autistic-like behaviors and generate more normal mouse behavior with a single injection of this drug.
This week, a special report on the brain. Scientists reverse autistic-like symptoms in mice, how teenagers with autism see things differently, and just how long does the teenage brain take to mature? Also, can you put barcodes on brain cells? But first, Suzanne Bard reports on what casino rats can tell us about gambling addiction.
Slot machines can rapidly lead to addiction. That's due in part to near misses. When players get 2 out of 3 matching symbols, they erroneously think they're getting better at the game, even though the odds remain the same, so they keep on playing. Turns out, laboratory rats playing the rodent equivalent of slots, with flashing lights instead of symbols, and sugary rewards instead of cash, fall into the same mental trap. This according to University of British Columbia behavioral neuroscientist Paul Cocker.
They will press the collect lever erroneously on 2 light trials, so when 2 of the 3 lights are illuminated, which sort of corresponds to this idea of a near miss that you get in humans, matching 2 items and the 3rd missing. And so the fact that we see these same sorts of errors in our rats implies that we're tapping into a similar sort of mechanism.
But when the rats were given a drug that blocks the dopamine 4 receptor in the brain, their impulsive behavior declined. Dopamine is a brain chemical involved in reward. The findings could potentially contribute to treatments for gambling addiction in humans.
Thanks, Suzanne. Scientists at the University of Washington have reversed autistic-like behaviors in mice by giving them a drug normally used to treat anxiety and seizures. Social deficits and repetitive behaviors are characteristic of autism in humans. BTBR mice have genetic mutations that cause similar behaviors. But pharmacologists Sung Han and William Catterall found that 30 minutes after administering a low dose of a benzodiazepine drug called clonazepam to these mice, their autistic-like behaviors ceased. Catterall explains.
We were able to reverse the autistic-like behaviors and generate more normal mouse behavior with a single injection of this drug.
The researchers think the drug acts by restoring the right balance of electrical activity in the brain.
The circuits in the brain have an inappropriate balance of excitation to inhibition. They are more excitatory and less inhibitory than they should be. Benzodiazepines would be expected to rebalance the excitation and inhibition in brain circuits.
Catterall says they hope to conduct clinical trials with autistic teens soon, but cautions that the causes of autism are not yet fully understood. And even if the treatment works, it might be effective only in certain people.
We can cure mice, but we don't know if these treatments will be effective in human autism. On the other hand, we think that the core social interaction deficits in autism are really very similar between mice and humans, even though humans have many more complicated aspects of autism. The core feature of poor social interactions and repetitive behaviors are there in both species. So we are optimistic that we'll see some positive effects from drug treatment.
The researchers reported their findings at the annual meeting of the Society for Neuroscience. Next, Suzanne reports on the relationship between autism and visual perception and attention.
Children with autism perceive human faces differently than typically developing children do, which may contribute to social impairments. But according to UC San Diego developmental neuroscientist Karen Dobkins, an enhanced ability to process objects may be partially responsible. She and her team found that autistic teens were much better at picking out slight differences between pictures of nearly identical cars than typically developing teens, and they think these perceptual differences may start early. They also found that infants at risk for autism are really good at distinguishing objects like toys from background noise.
And it may be that early on in autism, there's a great propensity to be attracted to and process non-face objects. And it might be that later on, that comes at the expense of processing faces properly.
She speculates that a decrease in face-to-face interaction in favor of technology may be contributing to social deficits in the digital age.
Since the invention of the internet and cell phones, many a parent, myself included, has been talking about the fact that this is a whole new world. You know, kids are no longer talking to people face-to-face. It's all talking through their text, through this device. And it looks like kids with autism might be particularly drawn to this computer world. And I think it could possibly gear the brain up to spend its resources on non-face objects, which I think could have negative repercussions for the ability to process faces and affect social interactions.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Compared to other species, humans have an extremely long adolescence, and brain research shows that our brains really are different during this phase. Correspondent Justin Warner tells us how the teen brain's mix of maturity and immaturity may help explain their strengths and weaknesses.
Few people understand teenagers like neurologist Jay Geed of the National Institute of Mental Health. Since 1991, he and his colleagues have tracked thousands of kids from childhood through adulthood with biannual brain scans, DNA analysis, and psychological testing. His teams learned that the brain takes a surprisingly long time to fully mature.
When we started, we thought, should we follow people till age 16 or 18? By 16, they're already like winning Olympic medals and, you know, pretty much growing up in so many ways. So we thought I'd play it safe and, you know, go to 18. But we hadn't really anticipated that as more like 25 to 30.
What's more, different parts of the brain mature at different times, the last one being the prefrontal cortex, the center of rational decision making. In teens, it's not nearly as developed as the centers of emotion, social interaction, and sex drive. Geed says this may make teens more reckless, but it also makes them more creative and open to new experiences.
And so this very long period that the brain kind of keeps options open is the basis for most of the good and bad.
Geed's team is also looking into mental illnesses like schizophrenia and bipolar disorders, which typically emerge in adolescence or young adulthood. He notes that in adolescence, our brains don't mature by getting bigger. Rather, they prune away excess connections like a sculptor carving a stone.
What we noticed, particularly for schizophrenia, was that all of the brain changes that we see in adults, we could have predicted by saying, what if the teen brain changes went in the right direction, but just too far.
Geed says this probably isn't the sole cause of schizophrenia, since there are signs of predisposition even in childhood, but it's a very consistent marker.
We haven't found an exception to that yet in terms of both the brain imaging findings of schizophrenia and the microscopic findings. If you just sort of said, what happened if the adolescent changes went too far, what would you see? It predicts almost all of the findings that we see in schizophrenia.
Understanding exactly why this correlation exists could lead to new kinds of early intervention, which could blunt or even prevent the onset of symptoms.
Thanks, Justin. The ubiquitous barcode may play a key role in schizophrenia research. Duke University cell biologist Nick Hill Urs and his colleagues are using them to catalog all the proteins in individual brain cells from lab mice. Urs says the goal is to dive deeply into how these proteins change in the mouse version of schizophrenia.
What we want to do is to analyze these differences or similarities between a normal mouse and a mouse that displays certain symptoms of schizophrenia and see what can we do to reverse these changes that have happened at the protein level.
Collecting all this information on barcodes could make it easier to analyze subtle patterns of change in specific types of brain cells, a feat that involves massive amounts of information. That could lead to more targeted, finely tuned treatments for schizophrenia and potentially other mental disorders. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, unraveling the mysteries of glowing slime, and could armadillos help end blindness? Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.